COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
The answer that Helmut Marko gave me was really interesting because he said, Isaac is different. Then I asked, do you think he could deal with the pressure of sitting next to Max Verstappen? And he just said, yes.
Hello and welcome to the James Allen on F1 podcast brought to you by Autosport. We're in between two fast, intense races, the Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort and the Italian Grand Prix at Monza, the race with the highest average speed lap on the calendar. So we've brought in two of our fastest thinkers, F1 writer Ronald Vording. How are you doing, Ronald?
Yeah, good, James. Good morning.
And our man in Italy, Roberto Quincaro. Ciao, Dottore. How are you?
Ciao, James. All good. And you okay?
Yeah, no, everything's fine. Thank you. Everything's fine. So listen, you were both in Zandvoort at the weekend. What was the atmosphere like and what was the chat in the paddock?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a home race, of course. For me, it's always special to be there. I have to say, Friday, it was definitely not sold out. I was trackside with my tabard and I was a bit shocked with all the empty seats. But then Saturday and Sunday, it was sold out and the atmosphere on the grid is... it's always pretty special, I have to say. They put on a good show in Zandvoort, in my opinion, also compared to most other races on the calendar. But the highlight for me of the weekend was not even anything related to the on-track action. It was a special media session we had with Toto Wolff on Friday night. It was organized by Mercedes-Benz Netherlands. So it was only for Dutch journalists. So there was a small group of 5 or 6 people there. And it was scheduled to last 20 minutes, but 5 minutes into the sessions, Toto said to his the German PR girls, he said, "Lass mal laufen, passt schon." And it ended up not being 20 minutes, but being 50 minutes. And I never had a media session with the F1 team boss that was as wild as this one. To give two examples, the first one, we were 2 minutes into the session. One of my colleagues asked about AI pictures. Of course, there are a lot of pictures circulating on the internet with Max and Toto. Some of them are real and some of them are fake. But Toto said, yeah, those pictures are one element, but also there are some deep fake 18 plus videos with my face in it. He said, I don't really mind those videos because I've got a great body in them. And as long as I perform well in the scene, then I'm happy with it. So I never heard an F1 team principal say anything like that. And then later on, also a second funny element is that he was talking quite openly about the talks with Max Verstappen between Max and Mercedes. He said, I think the chance to sign him one day is probably 50%. And a funny element, he said, if I do it next year into 27, if Red Bull is not really competitive, I only need to pay him 10%. that's also what he told manager Raymond Vermeulen. And then Raymond Vermeulen replied, yeah, that's because you're such a cheap Austrian. And Toto replied, yeah, you're such a greedy Dutchman. But the funniest bit is that George Russell all the time was in the room. So a couple of times I referred to a session we had with George and I said, hey, George said this yesterday about the new Mercedes engine. And then Toto shouted, George, did you say that? And yeah, George said, yes, I did. And then he went like, oh, you're such an asshole. So it was, I never experienced a session like that, but that was for sure the highlight of my weekend.
What does that tell us about his mood at the moment then, Roberto?
No, I think, James, that after the summer break, people want to talk a lot. I had a media session with Stefano Domenicali, and he talked 1 hour and 5 minutes. So follow us on Motorsport. We'll see a lot of news about that. And we talk about Zandvoort future also. And I asked him, is there a room for the Grand Prix that now has not a support from local or national governments, because of course the costs are very high. And he said, finally, I have to say no. I think that in the future, for the private promoter, like was for a long, long time, there are no chance. But about the weekend, it was impressive for me to see the reaction of spectators on the grandstand before the start. The atmosphere was fantastic. It's undoubtedly a very success event, linked to Max Verstappen popularity, of course. But I think the cost of organizing the event, probably Roland knows better than me, are very high. So without a government support, it becomes difficult for a promoter to make a profit.
Yeah, because then basically they need to pay everything by like five founding sponsors and then, of course, ticketing. And they're a little bit afraid what you already saw on a Friday. And also you saw it in Austria this year, that ticketing is becoming a little bit more difficult if Max is not winning that much anymore. We saw that in Austria as a part of the grandstands were even covered in plastic. And then here it was better because it was sold out on Saturday and Sunday. But they are a little bit afraid that long term it might be difficult because the hype might decline a little bit. Most Dutch people have been there. I mean, 2021, when it came back, it was massive. I guess they could have sold all the tickets three or four times, but that was a huge hype. And they want to prevent and be ahead of the moment that it becomes really, really complicated financially. And that's why they pull out after 26, which, yeah, I think, again, I fully agree with Roberto. It's a shame because it's still, I mean, drivers love the track. It's difficult in terms of overtaking, but the onboards over one lap are sensational. The atmosphere is great. The organization is good. So, yeah, it's a shame to see them go. But as Roberto pointed out, I think it's reality of F1 nowadays.
It's difficult to overtake, but it's not impossible. We have seen in the race. We have a couple of good examples. Sunday confirmed that it's possible to overtake in Zandvoort.
Yeah, and the funniest bit is that in 2023, of course, we had mixed weather condition, but that's the race with most overtakes in F1 history even. So it is possible. Probably you need a bit of changeable weather conditions, but yeah, you're right. It's not fully impossible to overtake in Zandvoort.
I thought it looked spectacular. I really enjoy the... It's kind of old school, isn't it? It's kind of narrow. They pop up over the top of a rise. You know, it's a bit like a sort of more compact version of Suzuka.
Yeah.
Not surprising, because both tracks were designed by the same guy, John Hugenholtz, back in the 60s, 70s, whatever. And it just has that very authentic feel to it. But because it's so intense, it's almost got like a gamification element to it. It looks almost more like a video game in the opening laps. And as you say, you have to be so committed to make an overtake. I thought the move of Leclerc on Russell was a perfect example of that. Later on, we're going to talk about Antonelli and obviously how he got it wrong and just generally the mood music around him. But I think that's one of the things that makes Zandvoort so special. And you can't really take your eyes off it, can you? Even though in the Grand Prix on Sunday, there were periods when it was a little quieter, you just knew that things were going to blow up again. Going back to what you were saying there, Roberto, about organizing Grand Prix and the chat with Stefano, of course, one of the other things that happened over the course of the last week was the prime minister in Thailand that Stefano has been talking to about having a Grand Prix in Thailand. You know, she'd got into some difficulties over there because of a phone call she made and what have you. And finally, she has been removed. So I don't know, was there much chat about the prospect of a Thai Grand Prix now receding from view? Because that was clearly a big setback in terms of the political stability in Thailand, Roberto.
I think the target that Liberty Media has now is to have a long-term project. They doesn't want to have one event, one good event, and then to see that the interest go down season by season. They want to have a 10-year plan, 5-year plan, very, very long one. Thailand is on the table. Stefano mentioned also Hockenheim that has come back to have a little bit more interest. Is in the waiting room Portugal, is in the waiting room Turkey, Morocco, and Rwanda is a little bit more complicated. The people of Rwanda want to have the Grand Prix, but what Liberty asks is not only to have the circuit, a good circuit. They want to have hotels, they want to get a good airport, they want to have a good logistic plan, and it's more complicated. Now Formula One is not only a 3-day event. They want to have a bigger impact. in the country, in the sports, because that start to that consent to have a biggest financial margin of operation. And it's quite strange because what Stefano said, listen, everybody thinks that Europe is dead because nobody wants to invest money. But he mentioned Hungaroring as a very good example. In 1 year, they rebuilt completely all the pit building and a big part of the facility and services. It was fantastic, the result they did. So this is an example that if you want, Europe has a big future in Formula One, but you need to have a government behind you that believe in Formula One, believe in the project and support the project.
So let's focus on the racing then. There we were with McLaren heading for their 8th 1-2 of the season. Piastri ahead of Norris when Norris's car breaks down with just a handful of laps to go. So instead of being 16 points behind his teammate in the standings with 9 races to go, it's now 34. F1 can be really cruel at times, can't it, Ronald?
Yeah, and it also, in a funny way, I don't think Lando agrees, but it relates back to that Toto Wolff session I talked about before, because an interesting element in that session was Toto reflected on Malaysia 2016. And he said, I made one big mistake in the whole Hamilton-Rosberg fight, especially after Malaysia. He said, I should have given them all freedom. So no more rules, do whatever you want. If you run into each other every single race, so be it, because we will win the championship anyway, like both titles. So I should have given them all freedom. With that in mind, I went to Andrea Stella on Saturday night and I asked him the question, okay, Toto said he made that one mistake. Would there be any moment this year where you give them, your drivers, all the freedom? I know they are free within the papaya rules, but would there be a moment where you say, okay, do whatever you want to maximize your own title chances? And then Stella replied, no, we will never do that because we have some principles that have been the work of many years and we will stick to them even if we have won the constructors, which is fair enough because also one element that wasn't mentioned is, of course, the budget cap. So if the McLaren drivers would have all freedom and crash into each other, it would definitely hurt development budget for 26. But that was Saturday night. And I don't know if we jinxed it, but then on Sunday, basically, Malaysia 2016 happened again with two differences that... Of course, Lando was not leading the Grand Prix now, and now we have a couple of more races to go. But yeah, this could be a massive day in the championship. And also we have some iconic pictures to go with that, I guess. Lando Norris sitting in the dunes. So I think it's not as devastating yet as Malaysia 2016, because we still have 9 races to go. I don't think it's fully over yet, but that was the consensus in the paddock. Also at some of the other teams, I had a chat with Helmut Marko, and he was quite outspoken and said, yeah, I think it's done now, because he already feels that Oscar is kind of mentally maybe the calmer or stronger one. And now he also has that buffer. So for them, it kind of adds up. I still hope Lando finds a way to fight back. Max was joking. He said, you put in a new engine for Monza, a bit more power and go and get them. But yeah, it's definitely an extremely painful one, especially because I feel this is a race that Lando should have won. He was quicker in all practice sessions. And then you get into Q3, the moment it really matters, especially a track like Zandvoort. And then Oscar just gets it right, which on the one hand side says maybe something about Lando, but also definitely about Oscar, because we shouldn't forget that last year this was one of the weakest tracks for Oscar and Lando was dominating. So it also tells you a lot about the progress that Oscar has made in 12 months.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that before this season, haven't we? I mean, Imola was another example of that. You can see he's really gone away methodically, worked on the tracks where he had weaknesses last year, and he's come out this year and been really strong. And it's interesting in terms of how he would get this back on track, because just back of an envelope maths, he would need to given that hardly anybody's likely to get between them, and they're going to score a lot of 1-2 finishes in the remainder of this championship with the car advantage they've got, Norris would need to beat Piastri in 7 1-2 finishes to get back ahead. I mentioned earlier on, they were headed for their 9th 1-2 finish as teammates over the last couple of seasons. But looking back on the ones before, Norris has only won 2 of those races where they finished 1 and 2. Piastri has won all of the rest of them. And Roberto, it's not over yet, clearly. But how do you see the challenge that Norris faces with 9 races to go?
I think for Lando in the Zandvoort weekend arrived 2 bad news. Of course, the first one was the engine failure that cost him 18 points. But it must also be considered that in any case, he would not have won the race. And we are talking about a circuit which Lando was very fast and impressive in 2024. But a year later, we saw Oscar Piastri capable to win. This is probably the most worrying aspect for Lando, even more than the 18 points lost due to the engine failure. Of course, now Oscar will have the opportunity to manage things better, considering the advantage he has in the general standings. But however, I believe for Lando, the biggest problem isn't so much the gap that separating him from Oscar, is the fact that Oscar is confirming that he's in a very exceptional form. In terms of speed, he's faster. You remember, he was faster in Hungary. Mm. A race that he lost because he was penalized by the strategy. He was leading the race in Silverstone before the penalty had been because of the safety car mistake he did before the restart. So overall, Piastri is confirming himself, even by a small margins, as an overall faster driver than Norris at the moment.
Yeah, and also that goes both ways in terms of confidence, because Roberto yes. mentioned the problem for Lando. But I immediately had to think back to Oscar's media session on Thursday, because he got a couple of questions saying, yeah, last year this was one of your weakest tracks and how will you manage? And he was, he's always really calm, but he was really calm. And he said, no, I'm not concerned, because usually my weakest track, James mentioned Imola, are my best tracks this year. And Zandvoort has been another confirmation. So if we go to another one, he will just know that I'm going to be fine. So in terms of confidence, it's boost after boost after boost. And Lando already had some hits maybe in terms of confidence. And now also knows that he has to go on the attack no matter what. So yeah, also mentally, I guess it's becoming a bit more complicated.
Yeah, because before the qualifying, I see a lot of colleagues in the press room, and I said, oh, if I was Lando now, I keep hidden my data to Oscar. But after the qualifying, I suspect that was Oscar that keep hidden his data until the Q3. The way he managed the Q3, the way he managed the start, the way he managed the restart, the way he managed the gap on Lando during the race, because he didn't offer him DRS, it was really, really impressive. If you see, the two restarts he had were not the same. The two restarts after safety car was the different one. So he absolutely impressive mental. This guy, it's only his third season in Formula One. Sometimes we forgot this. It's only his third season.
Yeah, and if you look at some of the moves, especially the one at the start that Roberto mentioned, that made me think like he's almost like a veteran already, because Lando got away quite well. Then Oscar covered him off. But then, of course, Max came around the outside. And Oscar was so smart to let the car roll a little bit towards the outside, create a gap again for Lando. That, of course, put Max on the dirt. So with one little move, which was an extremely smart move, he put like both drivers in a little bit of trouble. But of course, from his position, he had them both under control. And those are kind of the moves that you expect from really experienced drivers, probably multiple world champions. And as Roberto pointed out, it's his third season. And he not only has the pure speed, but also has those kind of tricks already to do whatever it takes basically to get it across the line.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Ronald, because at the start, for me, that was the standout moment. It was his positioning of the car just to edge Verstappen out wide, because he could see where he was. But it wasn't just to block the pass. It was exactly as you say, to give himself the best launch out, but also to put the two behind him into each other's, make each other's, you know, problem, you know, and that's exactly what happened. They then sort of passed and repassed each other. Verstappen got Norris, but I think what was impressive was the way that Norris, unlike, for example, Miami earlier in the season, where he really made heavy weather of trying to get past Verstappen. Here he was very decisive and very aggressive, very front foot. It was really positive if you're a Lando Norris fan to say, okay, you know, he's learned, he's not afraid of taking Max on. Of course, he's got a car advantage, but still, you know, the way he made that move was good. But I think it's generally that control, I think, isn't it? That's what we're sort of talking about here with Piastri, that he's very good at absorbing pressure. That's clear. I mean, you don't win F3 and F2 as a rookie without being able to absorb pressure in your sort of young mind, if you like. But it's also that he can put that cerebral layer, that clever layer of cuteness, of smartness on the top of it, like the block at the start. And I remember going back to when I used to have a lot of dealings with Michael Schumacher, and people used to say about him that what really he stood out is he was much brighter, much cleverer than people thought he was. But he also had that ability to drive under intense pressure and maintain rhythm, maintain control, but have more of his brain available to him to think at the same time of what he was trying to do than some drivers who are perhaps closer to the limit all the time, more emotional, more, you know, and they don't have as much thinking space. And I think that's what we're sort of seeing now with Piastri. We still have to go, however, to quite a few places where luck does tend to play a part. I mean, luck definitely intervened in Zandvoort, and there's no one to say that, especially with Mercedes having a few issues this season, that Piastri won't suffer an engine failure or some other technical difficulty. So that would definitely swing things back quite quickly. But when you're talking about tracks where luck plays a part, I'm thinking Brazil in the rain is an obvious one. The craziness of Baku, Singapore and the safety cars, and let alone when it rains. You remember that time, Roberto, when both Ferraris were eliminated at the start.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is fair to say that it looks like it's kind of out of Norris's hands now, doesn't it?
He has the chance to fill the gap. It will be not. He knows that it's not easy, and probably he knows that he needs to have something unpredictable, like has happened in Zandvoort. It's difficult to win 5-6 races in a row in front of this Oscar Piastri. That's probably is an arithmetic exercise that we are doing just to understand how many races he need to fill the gap. I think that scenario is a little bit, I think it's impossible, but he needs to do something different. I'm expecting here probably a little bit more aggressive. But if you see the career of Oscar, when he needs to be aggressive, he's there. I remember Monza last year. He's not the guy that because I heard some comment that Oscar is managing his season. I don't think so. When he needs to be aggressive, we have seen in Spielberg, we have seen in Hungary, the risk was just a few centimeters more and you had the crash with Lando in two breaking points. So I don't think he's... I'm expecting Oscar strong as Lando. I don't think they want to give Lando the possibility to win a lot of races. I'm expecting him aggressive. He doesn't change. I'm sure he doesn't change his approach.
You're listening to the James Allen and F1 podcast, part of the Autosport Podcast Network. For the latest from our reporters at the racetrack during F1 weekends, head to the Autosport F1 channel.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
So I'll stay with you, Roberto, because this was a painful race for Ferrari, a double DNF, non-finish, the first, I think, since Canada 2024. And both accidents which is interesting. Leclerc, not his fault, taken out by Kimi Antonelli, but a very strange accident for Lewis Hamilton on his own. Doesn't happen very often. Happened at Hockenheim a few years ago. I remember that race where everybody was wearing retro clothing and it all kind of went a bit sour for Mercedes on their anniversary. But it's very unusual for Lewis to do a mistake like this. What's the feeling in the team? What's the feeling around the camp?
It's a difficult time for Ferrari, but especially for Lewis. Obviously, the car is not able to fix the result expected at the start of the season. However, to this problem is another problem, because Lewis is still very far from the performance that Charles is showing. I honestly don't remember a weekend which a driver like Hamilton made so many mistakes. He started with two spins in the free practice, and then the mistake that cost him the race. I think it was probably lack of feeling, but it's still difficult to explain, because we are talking about a driver with such great experience that you struggle, but you expect something like that from a guy that has so long experience. In this case, we usually said that a good result is needed to turn the page. But it's still strange to think that we are talking about a seven-time world champion, a driver who made his Formula One debut in 2007. He should have a great mental solidity. So he is arriving in Monza as a big question mark, and five grid places on the grid. And I don't think that this was the scenario he had in mind on the eve of his first Monza as a driver, as a Ferrari driver. It became a big question mark. It's difficult because the gap with Leclerc is so big, and is always there. Qualifying, race, fastest track, slow track, street circuit, and I don't see progress. That is the biggest one. I believe that the nine races that he has now to in front of him will be very important for Lewis' future at Ferrari, and also for his feeling as well. It's very complicated, James, because I guess I cannot imagine something like this.
It's interesting, Ronald. It's a slightly mischievous question, but I'll ask it to you anyway. Earlier on, you were commenting on you go and have a chat with Helmut Marko at Red Bull, the advisor, who, of course, has got a great eye for a driver. There's no two ways about it. And he's very, very experienced. He can be a bit mischievous sometimes. But have you had a word with him about what he thinks is going on with Hamilton?
No, not yet. Maybe I can try to have him. Monza would be interesting, I guess.
I'd be very interested to know what he thinks about that.
Yeah, probably best to do that off the record. But but for sure. I still think, of course, Roberto is right. He's a seven-time world champion. But I still think that we shouldn't underestimate the challenge of going to Ferrari, going to a complete new environment, I also had the word about that with Toto, which was an interesting element. Well, basically two interesting elements with Toto. First of all, he said, which I hadn't heard before, but he said, was quite open by saying, yeah, of course, Lewis is still the GOAT, but he said Lewis's move to Ferrari saved me from probably the most difficult conversations that I ever had to needed to have in my career, which of course would be the moment that he had to replace Lewis by Kimi Antonelli. And that would have been extremely difficult, both from a personal level and also, of course, as a Mercedes team principal. So that was one bit. And the second thing is that he said, yeah, Lewis was, of course, questioning himself before the summer break. Toto immediately called him that same evening and said it was not right to do that, because can you ever imagine Michael Jordan saying, oh, they have to take me off the pitch, I'm not good enough anymore. So Toto said that was not correct. But he then added, and that was interesting, he said, yeah, in Mercedes, he had such a comfortable environment. So if you don't feel happy about things, you can shout, you can do whatever you want, but you're basically within your family. So you know exactly...
You're in a safe space, yeah.
Yes, and
yeah,
you know how people will react. And also, Toto knew exactly how to react to him. Sometimes Toto said, I put an arm around him. Sometimes I just let him go for like 1 hour and then it normalized again. And he was not saying that at Ferrari, it's not as good, but he said just Ferrari is different. And also in terms of environment, it's probably a bit of unknown for Lewis coming in. It's completely different from like a family you've been part of for so long. So it's everything. It's adapting to a new car. It's adapting to a new team. Then things go against you at the racetrack. So pressure increases even more. And yeah, that's why I do agree with Roberto that I don't see a quick fix for that. I guess now he just has to hope that the 26 car will suit him better, which is probably why he's so focused on writing those letters, not only operationally, but also what he wants to see from the 26 car. But that's also tricky because Charles is the one delivering on track at the moment. So if you're Ferrari, what do you do? So that's, it's a very, very complicated situation.
I want to add, Ronald, you mentioned, of course, that in Mercedes was a very good place for Lewis. His comfort zone was there. He was able to do what he wants. And the atmosphere was good. But that is something that you have when you have won races, have you won world championship. So the people respect you a lot because you give to the team a lot of good results, a lot of good performances, a lot of good days, and the people start to respect you more. It's something that nobody admits, but it's like this in motorsport. My sport in generally, when you are on top, like Lewis has been for a long time in Mercedes, nobody can discuss you because you are you won seven world championship with Mercedes, so how can you discuss with Lewis Hamilton? And now it's different. He start a new story, and at the moment it's Leclerc, as you mentioned, that is giving the team the best result and probably the best information for the car development. And it's very strange, this thing, because honestly I expected the opposite. I expected Leclerc faster in qualifying, but Lewis very consistent in the race and probably better in technical feedback. But now it's not like this. The scenario now, Leclerc is doing the job for the team.
Yeah, but also I've said that at the beginning of the year. I never really believed the hype. And I think, not in Italy, for sure not in Italy, but I think some people outside Italy underestimated also Charles, because I mentioned at the beginning of the year that people say, oh, Charles, he's so quick over one lap. But it's not only that, because last year he made a huge step. And last year he got so consistent in races with his tires, not making too many stupid mistakes, consistency throughout the year. So he's really making that step. I mean, the car is not good enough, but to be a real championship contender. And when Lewis joined the team, I felt that people thought too lightly and easily about Charles. And I immediately thought he's going to have an incredibly difficult time to reach his level. And I think that's also part of the issue, that the beginning of the year, the hype and the expectations were so high. And in my opinion, they have never been realistic. And that's what you see now with reality kicking in. And there's a huge discrepancy between reality and the expectations.
I agree with you completely, Ronald. And I think that Leclerc, it's not really visible, but I think Leclerc is now at the level that if you give him the car, he can win you a world championship or more than one world championship. So you've now, I think you've got, you know, Piastri, Norris, perhaps Leclerc, Verstappen. Verstappen, I think, is still a slight nudge ahead. I think he's got other things that the others haven't got yet. But I think you've got at least three guys who are at a very, very, very high level. And it's interesting with Hamilton, because I think we should compare him with the other seven-time world champion, because it's easy to forget that when Michael was in his prime, before his first retirement, when he was at Ferrari, he was obviously operating at a very, very high level. He was the dominant figure in the sport. Alonso came along much younger, took him on, beat him twice. And then Michael had some problems with his back particularly, and I think he just realized it was probably time for him to stop. But I don't think in his heart he thought he was done. But he did stop. But then he came back. He had a couple of years off, of course, so you could argue that he maybe was a bit out of practice, but he'd been racing all his life. But you have to remember that he came back past the age of 40, and he wasn't the same driver when he came back with Mercedes in a new project. It was a different environment. It wasn't the space that he'd had at Ferrari. Jean Todt wasn't there. Ross Brawn wasn't there. All of those things. So there are some comparisons you can draw here between them, even though Schumacher did have a break between his moves, if you like.
And James, you remember that when Mercedes announced Michael Schumacher was coming back, everybody said, oh, bad news for Nico Rosberg at the time. No, he's going to kill Nico Rosberg. And exactly as Ronald said, was happened the same when Ferrari announced Lewis Hamilton. Oh, they did not believe in they are not believing in Leclerc. That's why they have got Lewis Hamilton. And then the track said something completely different. So in the end, you can suppose some scenario, but in the end, it's the track that said the truth.
We go from one of the oldest drivers on the grid. I want to just talk about two of the youngest, because I think there were interesting weekends for two of our rookies. Isaac Hadjar, I was impressed with him pretty much from the beginning of the season, the way he bounced back from that terrible start in Melbourne where he made a schoolboy error and ended up in tears and people were laughing at him and Marco said some very unkind things, etc. But he dug in and came back almost straight away in the races that followed. And, you know, he's been the rookie of the year without a doubt. And he completely cemented that at the weekend, not just by getting a podium, but, you know, by qualifying in fourth place and qualifying in fourth place on merit. I mean, I be honest with you, I follow the drivers coming through. I know you two both do as well, very closely. I saw Piastri coming a long time ago. I saw Leclerc coming very early in his career. I did not have Hadjar on my radar like I did with some of the other guys coming through. In F2 particularly, I didn't think he was all that impressive. But he's been really, really good. And I'd just like to get, you know, Ronald, maybe you first, your thoughts on him. Because, you know, you're close to the whole Verstappen situation, the Red Bull situation. How do you think they're viewing him? I mean, Christian Horner indicated to me, you know, a few days before Red Bull sacked him, that Hadjar would be moving up the following year and what have you. But do you think they still feel that way, or what do you think the plan will be for him for 2026?
Yeah, well, a couple of things to pick up on. First one, about his junior career. I agree. Of course, he was not as exceptional as Oscar, and I still think Oscar is on a higher level as a talent. I think that's pretty clear. But to be fair to Helmut Marko, every time I talked to him last year, he basically said, "Yeah, but we have Isaac Hadjar in F2, and without some technical failures, he should have been 80 points ahead, and he's massively quick." So even though maybe the outside world didn't really see it, Helmut Marko always rated him like very, very high and was pretty convinced that he would succeed in Formula One. And on the future, it was interesting. I had a chat again with Helmut Marko in Zandvoort after the race. We had, first of all, the media session with Laurent Mekies, who said exactly the same as you, James, that this is not just a bit of luck and getting a podium. No, he said he put the car on merit on P4, made no single mistake in the race with the Ferrari and the Mercedes behind him. But then downstairs, I walked into Helmut Marko and I said, okay, let me just try. So I asked him, I said, okay, how difficult is it to find the right balance between, of course, rewarding him for an outstanding rookie season by giving him the promotion, but at the same time, you don't want to do it too early because you don't want to ruin his career before it actually started. Because, you know, we all know what happened to teammates that ended up next to Max Verstappen and basically they got destroyed. And then the answer that Helmut Marko gave me was really interesting because he said, Isaac is different. I'm not 100% sure if I agree, but at least it tells you a lot about how people within Red Bull look at him. And then he said, yeah, we've got for sure another good one coming through. So that's Hadjar. And about his mental strength, he also looked at the Zandvoort weekend and he said, don't forget, he missed one practice session on Friday with a battery issue, missed the other half of the other practice session also, and still he went to Marko, and that tells you something about confidence. Hadjar went to Marko and he said, yeah, don't worry, because I think I will still qualify in the top five. And then he delivered on it by putting the car on the second row. So Marko saying that he's different, and then I asked, do you think he could deal with the pressure of sitting next to Max Verstappen? And he just said, yes, and I think that tells you a lot about what's going to happen at Red Bull. They don't need to do it quickly. They also don't want to act out of emotion now. They repeat it, they have time, and also they have, because all the drivers are under Red Bull contracts anyway. So they kind of indicated to wait until October, probably Mexico. They mentioned Mexico as a reference point, so also Yuki still has some time to prove himself. But I think those couple of quotes from Helmut Marko are really telling about, first of all, how they look at Hadjar, and secondly, probably what will happen for 26.
And then presumably Lindblad would go into the Racing Bulls and they'd move things up. So, okay. And the other rookie, the other end of the spectrum, Roberto, who's struggling a bit at the moment, is your fellow countryman, Antonelli. And it wasn't a great weekend for him. It wasn't a great end to the weekend for him with the collision in the race. What's going on there? And what do you think is going to happen next?
Well, the start of the season was quite good. He was able to fix good results in the first part of the season. He guaranteed to the team points. He guaranteed to the team what the team was expecting from him, especially at the start of the season. And then the problem starts when the team changed the rear suspension, changed the feeling of the car, and George Russell has the experience to manage it, and Kimi struggled more with that suspension. So in the end, the team came back because also the performance was not there. Remember in Spa, where the team was lost. And in Hungary, in terms of performance, Kimi was less than 2 tenths from George. And the same was in Zandvoort. In the end, the gap that he had from Russell in Q2 was less than 2 tenths. But that excluded him from Q3. That changed completely the weekend, because when you are out of Q3, it's very difficult then to recover the time. But what surprised me more was the crash he had Friday morning, because the collision with Charles, okay, you are fighting, you have new tires, can happen. And Charles said can happen, it's a race incident. But he was out in FP1. That's something that surprised me a lot. And said, the pressure is very high behind this guy. Because, of course, he's a rookie, but he's an 18 now, 19 years old. And probably the two things together create a big problem. Consider that his teammate is George Russell. So you are for him, the problem is the benchmark is Russell. If you are Hadjar, that is doing a fantastic job, but his teammate is Lawson. If you are faster, a little bit faster than Lawson, you have done the job. For Kimi, it's very difficult. And I think that he needs to show a reaction. I think after Monza, I think Monza will be difficult for him. After Monza, probably we will see the best Kimi. And I'm sure that he has the team trusting him, Toto trusting him. So we have in 26 the chance, but 26 will be a very important call, because you cannot do two seasons in this way.
To basically go back to the beginning, to that Toto session, it was also really interesting about Kimi, because I mean, we was talking like we were in a pub basically. So I thought, okay, I will just ask him now. And I asked Toto, I said, okay, with hindsight, with the knowledge you have now, do you feel that promoting Kimi has been 1 year too early, maybe? And then Toto looked at me, waited for 2 seconds, and he said, I didn't have any other intelligent options, he said. So, of course, Lewis moving, and they knew that Kimi would be the long-term future of the team anyway, so then it fell a bit in place. And maybe if you look at it, he could do with one more year in, let's say, F2 or whatever, to maybe gain some more experience. But yeah, basically driver market, I wouldn't say forced them to do it, but the opportunity presented itself. And then Toto explained, he said, we knew exactly that there would be moments that we would pull our hairs by some stupid rookie mistakes. But also there would be moments that he would show glimpses of his incredible talent. And we have seen both elements this year, but we have even seen both elements in Zandvoort. So I feel like the Dutch Grand Prix weekend has been a perfect summary, in a way, of Antonelli's season so far. Because he was on his way to a great recovery drive. So he showed his speed, which he has also done in Montreal, which he has also done in Miami with the sprint pole. And at the same time, he showed a couple of rookie mistakes. The one on Friday that Roberto mentioned, the one with Leclerc. I mean, we've had the one in Spielberg with Max. So in a way, I feel Zandvoort has been the perfect summary of his season. I fully agree with Roberto. We just need to give him time, and probably he will learn from all of this going into 26. The only difficult thing is that, of course, when you're in the Mercedes factory team, all eyes will be on you. and you're fighting at the sharp end of the grid. So if you take out Charles Leclerc, there will be a lot of more media attention than if you have a collision, let's say, in the back with one of the Sauber guys. So that's, it adds up. I mean, the pressure, if you're in Mercedes, naturally is huge. But yeah, I think as Toto, I mean, Toto is smart enough, so he knew that moments like this would come. He knew that he just needs to give him time. He knew that Antonelli is the long-term prospect of the team. And yeah, I think we just have to give him that time and maybe just a bit more in 26, but for sure not now.
Exactly. So he's not exactly driving to survive, as the phrase goes, but he's some way off thriving. Hopefully
surviving to drive.
Exactly. Hopefully in the final part of this season, we can see a little bit more of what Kimi Antonelli is made of. Well, that will do us. My thanks to Ronald and to Roberto. You can read all of their latest news and insights on Formula One from Monza this weekend on the Autosport and Motorsport channels. My thanks to producer Ben, and thanks to you all for listening. Please click to follow or subscribe, leave us a review and a rating, and tell all your F1 mad friends about us. We'll be back with another podcast very soon.
You've been listening to the James Allen on F1 podcast, part of the Autosport Podcast Network. For the latest from our reporters at the racetrack during F1 weekends, check out the Autosport F1 channel, wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple and Spotify.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.